Hello and welcome to our call tonight for the Clinical Mastery of the Digestive System. I'm Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and I'm always excited to be here with all of you to just really do whatever I can to support you in caring for your clients and your future clients. And in this particular case, it's the digestive tract that we're looking at. We know that the digestive tract is pretty complex, and there's a lot to it. And when people present with certain conditions or certain symptoms, it may not always be clear that the underlying cause is the digestive tract, but it's important for us to know that that's a place to look for even more far-reaching and systemic situations. We are working on getting more of the modules up. I sat down to record some of my things over the weekend, and it turns out, well, I had a lot of interruptions, but what happened was I looked at the slides and I realized that there was so much more I wanted to add. So I'm re-recording a whole bunch of segments for it, and my goal is to have them done by the January 1st. So we'll have them there very soon. So in the meantime, you have 9 modules. And that was the original class that we did was about 9 modules. Well, it was a little less than that. And we've added a whole bunch of new material, and that's what the delay is in getting that all done. So I'm looking forward to using this call tonight, number one, to answer any questions that you have about the materials, about how to apply those materials, and how to really work with your clients who have specific digestive issues. So you can ask questions about a particular client or patient. And then number two is to go over cases. And the cases, we've got, I think, 3 of them that had been submitted in advance. So I want to go through those cases and see what's been submitted, and then how I can support you in helping those particular clients. So let's begin by just getting a little connection, and I'd love to hear from everybody who's on the call. I'm going to lower hands. Anybody that's on the call right now, if anybody has anything you want to share with me in terms of, like, I'd love to know where you are in the materials. First of all, I'd like to know anybody that's been through all of the modules so far and feels like you're ready and raring to get the next pieces together, raise your hand with a star too. And I don't see any hands going up. So anybody that's part of the way through and is moving along at a comfortable pace through the stuff, go ahead and raise your hand with a star too. And you can type it into the chat too. We have the Join Me chat up. I'm just trying to get a sense of where everybody's at. Let's see the chat. I don't see anything. And you can pop a message on the chat as well. So anybody that hasn't started at all, raise your hand with a star too. If you're just kind of hanging out and waiting and have a goal that you're going to get started after the first of the year, that's fine too. If you're here and you're hearing my voice, raise your hand with a star too. Okay. I see a whole bunch of names there, but nobody's responding. Okay. So go ahead and just type in and let me know where you're at. Not really clear. I only got 2 people to raise their hands even then. So for the rest of you, I'm glad you're here. And I'm glad to help you in any way I can. Maria says, my goal is to start January. Perfect. That's great. The more you listen in and the more you hear other people's cases and other people's questions, the more you're going to learn. So even if you haven't been through the materials, it's awesome. It's not a problem. Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and begin. And I'm going to begin with looking at any questions that might have been typed in advance. And Sarah says, I'm moving along at a comfortable pace, but didn't have a case yet. That's fine. These calls, you're going to learn a tremendous amount just by coming in and hearing other people's cases. And if we hadn't had cases submitted, I would have pulled one out of my own files. I've got plenty of digestive labs and all the other kinds of things that we could have gone over. Super. So I'm going to look at, see what's on the, okay.
So let's go ahead and let me pull up the first case. I don't see any questions. Lynn, would you go ahead and please check the Ask the Doctor questions section to make sure that I didn't miss anything? I didn't see anything there earlier today when I went in, but I would love your help with that, please. Okay, so the first case we had was from Shonda. Is Shonda on the call? Shonda, if you're on listening in, please let me know. I don't see you. Let me see. It's hard to tell because some people come in as like this nondescript names. So Shonda submitted a case. And I like to make sure that the person is actually on the call when I do the case. If not, I can do it without, but it's usually helpful because then I can ask questions. And then the other cases, let me just see who I can see. Yeah, so Shonda, if you're on the web, go ahead and type your name in and let me know that you're there. I have, who else's case is here? I'm hoping that they synced with my Dropbox. If not, I'm just going to open them up in mock forms because it's hard for me to do Dropbox on the web because then I have to download them. And it gets my screwy. All right, let's see. Ah, Shonda, Janet, and Shonda has two of them, so there's three. So Janet or Shonda, let me know if you're on the call right now. And in the meantime, if any of you have questions, you know, quick questions, questions about content, questions about anything. Maria, I'm not sure if your hand's up because you have a question or because you answered my question about being here. So I just put your hand down and then go ahead and raise it again if you did have indeed have a question and I'll answer it. And I don't see either Janet or Shonda on the call, but you might be here. If you are, just go ahead and type in that you're here. And in the meantime, Michelle says, I've worked through the materials on the site. I don't have a case study working on me first. Yay. Going, doing the grand program, did the 30-day leaky gut protocol. We'll be doing the candida in the next day or two. Submitted my own, but I'm waiting for test results. Great. Perfect. Okay. I'm not hearing from, I'm just going to go ahead with the cases then. I'm not hearing from any of the people that submitted them, but that's okay. So I'm going to start with Shonda's was first. Number 54, 55, and 56 were the case numbers that have been submitted. And she's got, let's see, her case. This is in a, is this a digestive case? Because this is just a digestive. You know, I'm not sure that this is a appropriate case. I think this is for our NEPT call. Let me see. She has put up a thing, but I think it's a 305, which is an adrenal. Lynn, did you review these cases? Are any of them? All right. Let me go back. Because this one says NEPT, not CMDS. So let me look at the other. Okay, I'm looking. Yeah, because if they're more the generic cases, those are intended for the NEPT cost, not for. And this is not. Nope. Let's go back to Janet's, and then I'm going to go into mock forms. Lynn, are there any questions on the CMDS page? Thyroid, let's see. Nope. I think these were submitted for the, okay, let me just look. Meantime, if you have questions, go ahead and put them in. Lynn, if there were questions, can you please pass them on to me? I'm going to go on the site and see if I can find them. Okay, I'm signing into mock form and seeing uploader. And they were not put in today. These are, nope, it's not there. And I'm going to put in case. Okay, we got a couple of them here. Yeah, these are old. These are a week ago. These are not for this call today at all. Okay, so we'll skip those, and those will be going on our NEPT call. Just received the result. Who is this from? Who is this from? You know what? I'm just going to go to the thing myself. I'm having a hard time with doing it this way. So I'm just going to go to the page, and I'll be able to do it better that way. I thought it would be easier, but I guess it's just easier if I go to the page myself. All right, so we have Jan said, just received the results of my most recent BioHealth 401H lab, and I uploaded the one-page report. According to the lab, the H. pylori is gone. Yay! It also says negative for occult blood, fungi, yeast, parasites, ova, and ova parasites. Report says normal flora after 24 hours, but also says final report E. coli isolated abundant. Not sure what to make of that since I now feel fine and I'm not symptomatic for E. coli, no UTIs, no diarrhea, etc. However, could the E. coli overgrowth be why I still have gut issues with eating FODMAPs? Should I do the Erva-Ursi and the L-Bargaris? Would that be enough to take care of the E. coli imbalance? So she said she uploaded it. Let me see where she uploaded it. Let me go back. Well, and it's really nice when you do a test like that and you get H. pylori. H. pylori is challenging to get rid of, and there's a number of protocols. If you guys have studied it all with Steph, she has a number of protocols with her within her Core Reset program for customizing particular antimicrobials, and it takes some work. I've had good results with things like mastic gum, with Designs for Health has something called GastroMend HP. I've also used that. I've used straight mastic gum, along with other antimicrobials for the gut. And then I've also used something called Matula Tea, which is quite expensive, but they guarantee it. If you don't get back a clean test after running through two rounds of it, they'll give you your money back. I don't know. I've read a lot of good stuff about it, but hard to say because I generally don't rely on one thing. I usually do it in conjunction with other stuff. But it is a good sign when you can get rid of it. I'm looking here, entries, to see if Jan loaded up, because hers was a couple of weeks ago. Here's Jan's. So this is for CMDS. Perfect. This is good. We can look through this. This is Jan's, and this was submitted 3 weeks ago. But where is the document? It looks like she tried to upload it, but it didn't get uploaded, unfortunately. Oh, Jan, are you on the call, Jan? Can you email it to me? But sure, it looks like your file didn't get put up. Bummer. All right, so let's talk about that. She's talking about that. She's showing E. coli on the test. And so it's usually like everything's fine, but then they culture it for 24 hours. Some of the labs will do what they call culture insensitivity. And so they find particular bugs, and then they run those bugs. They culture them on plates, petri dishes, and then they look at various pharmaceuticals, and they also look at herbs. And they see which things have the best results at killing it off. And so they rate them as like this, that it's a high sensitivity, meaning that that bug is highly sensitive to that particular nutraceutical or pharmaceutical, and that would be a good choice. Or they have a very low sensitivity. Now, because there's so many antibiotics in our society, it's in the food, it's in the people taking the medication, sometimes in the birth control pills, there's all kinds of things that just throw off and kill the normal gut flora. It's very common for these bugs to become antibiotic resistant. They also become nutraceutical resistant, especially if you've got people who are just blindly throwing a whole bunch of stuff at their bugs and saying, "What, you know, they'll take 2 months of golden seal or, you know, 3 months of a particular antimicrobial." They get used to it, and they're very good at mutating so that they become resistant. So one of the things that's really important is I like to look at those results. And Doctors Data does a really nice job on that. Genova does an okay job of it. My best one, when we're really trying to hone in and see what are the bugs that are there and what pharmaceuticals or nutraceuticals are going to work, is the Doctors Data. That's the one I'm using the most often now. I love the BioHealth because it tends to be the most sensitive to the H. pylori. So that's one that I really like doing. So Jan did her follow-up with the BioHealth. So now we're going to look at, well, we don't know. They didn't do a sensitivity. They don't do that at BioHealth. Hopefully in the future they will. But we can kind of guess at some of the things that might help with H. pylori. It's a bacteria. So berberine tends to be something I see a lot showing up as being helpful for H. pylori, for E. coli. Uva ursi, she mentioned, and we think about that as a UTI kind of an herb, but it also works for E. coli type infections in the digestive tract. In fact, I just did a culture insensitivity on someone the other day, and uva ursi showed up as relatively high. Another one I see showing up a lot as being really helpful for these microbes, for the bugs, is something like caprylic acid, which is a component of coconut oil. So you can look at putting somebody on a caprylic acid supplement, but you can also look at getting them on some coconut oil or MCT oil, which is much higher in caprylic acid. There's one coconut oil, which I'm trying with somebody right now. It's an MCT oil from Bulletproof, which claims it to be like the highest in the caprylic acid of all the oils. And I ordered some for myself, and I had this guy order it for as a result of his test, and we're going to see what happens with that. It's also good for brain, you know, for people who have memory problems and other stuff like that. So I would say, Jan, it's probably a good idea to pick 3 or 4 antimicrobials that are good antibacterials. So certainly berberine. Caprylic acid might be one of them. Uva ursi can be another one. Some people do well with a colloidal silver. Thinking of the other stuff that showed up. Plant tannins can work. There's something called virucidin that can also work. Lynn is just uploaded to me. Where did that go? She just uploaded to me. Yeah, you could have just put this in the folder, but that's okay. I'll just get this down. It's taking a few seconds to open for me. So she's opening me. She just sent me this, and I can open it up on the screen so you guys can see it. Okay, and it's very simple test. So I'm going to share my screen. So if you are on Join Me, you can take a look at this. Let's see, if I go like this and I say share window. So guys, let me know if you can see. It should be. Let's see. Let me do this again. Share window. It's It's not taking. Try it one more time. Share window. Okay, let me know in the chat if you can see my window. We should be seeing Jan's test. It says my window is now being shared, so you should be seeing it. Great. Okay, so this is a lab report from BioHealth. It's called their GI pathogen screen with H. pylori, so it's their 401H. They have a GI pathogen screen that doesn't have H. pylori, and that's just a 401. But they also have an H. pylori, so if you're doing a follow-up, like say she had this perfectly normal test, everything was fine except for the H. pylori, and we just wanted to follow up with the H. pylori, we could go ahead and do that. Or say what we wanted to do was follow up, but maybe do a different report. Like say she shows up with this E. coli. Now she does some protocols for this. Maybe in 2 months she wants to show up again, but maybe she wanted to check to make sure the H. pylori is still not there. So we could do the 401, not the 401, but the H. pylori only test with BioHealth. I think it's around $110, $120. And then we could also do the doctor's data on the full comprehensive stool analysis. And I can show you one of those. I just have to be really careful that I don't show somebody's name on it. So I'm not sure if I can do that right now. But it was an interesting one that came back. Okay, so she's got, if you see up at the top, the preliminary report, and I typically see this, it says normal flora after 24 hours. So then what they did was they, you know, left it go a little bit longer to see what would grow, and the E. coli was isolated, and it was abundant. I've seen abundant, I've seen rare, and I've seen few. So we really want that to be none or rare. But I've seen this a lot where it's fine at 24 hours, but then beyond that, when they continue to go through, their final report shows that the E. coli actually grows, and it grows abundantly. Now, E. coli is also part of our normal flora. So if it was just said few or rare, then probably not a big deal, but it does say abundant, so she probably should deal with this, right? Especially if she is prone to UTIs, because a lot of times UTIs are caused by the transference of bacteria from the gut, you know, from the proximity of the anus and the urethra, and they can pass through. And that's why women are especially prone, especially after sex, because there's a lot of friction going on and there could be a lot of passage and communication, you know, moving between the rectum and the urethra. So if you do have abundant growth in the gut, it could be a problem with the rest of it. Now, it could also be that this E. coli was isolated in the stool, that it could be in a SIBO type situation, maybe it's living up higher, or that it's just still in the large intestine, but it's causing some problems where it's actually doing some fermentation of some of the carbohydrates. And she said she's still sensitive to some of the FODMAPs, which would indicate that, yeah, there's some stuff going on. So I would, in this particular case, I would pick a few antimicrobials. Let me see if I can pull up another chart, and I'll see if I can hide the name on it, because I have one that shows one of the sensitivity panels from a different lab, from Doctor's Data, but you could see the kinds of things that typically would show up. Let me see where I can find it. Who should I show? I had one that was really cool because there was a whole bunch of stuff like Klebsiella, and let me find it and I'll show you. And you can see which of the antimicrobials tend to show up in these cases. It's taking a little while on my computer. I don't know, for some reason my computer's really slow today. I'm not sure why. Maybe because I have too many windows open. Well, phooey, it's not doing real well here. What I'm going to do while it's trying to open that is I'm going to close her mock form. I'm going to go to back to the question page. And Isabella said, what does it mean when someone's having foul flatulence 4 to 6 hours after consuming fermented foods, 2 to 3 tablespoons? Breath SIBO test indicated negative with digestive enzymes and HCL help. You know, sometimes it's the people are sensitive to particular strains that are in fermented foods. It could be that
that the fermented food, you know, that wasn't done right, and that there's some pathogens that have grown in there. I would say if that happens, I would have somebody try several different types, try the home-brewed ones, but try also several of the ones on the market. If it happens with all of them, then what I would do is stop them from doing that. If it's not just the first time, if it consistently happens, then I would get some probiotics and start to replenish, but I would do some of the D-lactic acid free ones, or some of the probiotics, and see if the probiotics themselves cause problems. So if you just have any probiotic that you have at home that would typically have a wide variety of lactobacillus and bifidus species, and that causes the foul gas, then that could be a problem. So it's basically, there's something fermenting it. Now, it could be a FODMAP problem. It could be, it's most likely that there's some bacterial overgrowth that's creating that problem. So that's Isabella's problem. Jan is on the phone. Oh, okay. Let me get Jan up. That's great. I didn't see her earlier. Let me open up her line. Move this out of the way. I'll open your line up in a second, Jan. I'm trying to move everything out of the way so that I can. Let me just move your screen with your. Where is it? I have too many windows open right now. There it is. There it is. I'm going to take this and move it all the way over. I'm going to move this one over the other way so there's no overlap, and then I'm going to open up your line. Okay, so Jan. So you don't, there you are. Okay, Jan. I'm going to open up your line. Okay. There's a big reverberation. Yeah, it is you. So I think you're probably listening to me on the web. So you're going to have to turn that down somehow. Or you have to put a headset in because somehow I'm reverberating. Let me see if that works. You there?
Yeah, how are we now? Okay.
No.
I just closed it.
I'm turning you off. Because I can't. Okay, just try closing something and let's see. You might have an extra window. Nope, that's not going to work. It sounds like you have two windows open with me. One is where you're talking on the web call, and then the other one is you might be listening somewhere else. Could that be the case? Are you also listening on the what do you call it? The join me? Let's see.
Sorry.
That's weird because I'm on the web call too. I wonder if. Let me just change. No, I'm on the headset, so it wouldn't be me. Let me try putting you on speaker and see if that makes a difference. That might make it worse, though. But I'm on a headset, and nobody else is going to hear you until I put you on playback device. I'm going to put – oh, I do have you on there. So let me put you – no, I don't. I have you on. Let me put you here, and let me try it again. Okay, Jan, let's see.
Nope. Yep.
Nope, it's on your end. So I'm just going to, you can use the chat to communicate with me and let me know what's going on and ask any questions or make comments. I don't know if you've done anything with this because it was submitted like 3 weeks in advance. So go ahead and let's use the chat because it's not going to work to have you on the live call. Let me pull up that other one that I was going to pull up, which is, let's see if it'll actually open for me, where I can look at some of my cases, and I have a couple of these stool tests. So I just want you to see what the sensitivity would look like, and if there's especially if I have one that has I don't know what's wrong with my computer today. It's just like spinning around when I try to open up a folder. All right, let's see if it opens.
Okay. There it is. Who did one recently? He didn't have bacterial stuff. Who had the Klebsiella? Somebody I did recently had Klebsiella in there, and that was, it wasn't her. Maybe it was, let me think. Oh, there was somebody recently that had Klebsiella. Well, I'm just going to let me try this one. I'm going to try to pull the person's name off. And I'll just do that part of the screen. I'll just do a screen capture of that page. That way you don't see his name. So Steph submitted a CMDS case study. Is it on the mock forms? Because it's going to take a while for it to upload to my Dropbox. All right, let me get this one out, and then we'll look at hers. I just want to show her real quick. Functional health, GI pathogen. Okay, let's see. No, that's the biohealth one. I don't want to show that one. I want to show the stool one. Here we go. I'm going to just open it. I don't want you to see it, so you won't see it until I, let's see. Okay, I'm just going to do a screen capture of the thing, and then I'll put that in another window, and then I'll show that window. So I'm going to show the capture. Let me just go, and we'll go to because I want you to see what the sensitivity panels look like and what some of the bacterial stuff would be. Because his is mostly candida and antifungals. I was hoping to show you. Let's see. Is it going to have his name on there? Let me see if I can do this. I'm afraid I might show his name. So I want to. Okay. Capture image. Okay, let's see if I can share this one. Let me see if I can share this window. Share window and this. All right, so tell me if you see, whoops. All right. Yeah, so tell me if you see the window. Do you see that? Oh, shared window is not available. Let me do this. Share window. No, it's not. It won't let me do that. So let me put this into, let me copy this into a copy, and I'm going to put it into a PowerPoint. PowerPoint's easy to do that with. So file, new, hopefully the PowerPoint will show. And we're going to go paste. Okay, good. And then I'm going to say, see if this will show, share window. Okay, let's see if I say slideshow from beginning. Ah, okay, this should work. Let's see, share window. All right, tell me if you see that, guys. Oh, now where am I? Oh, wait, this just is a full screen. Hang on. Sorry about that. Yay? You can see the thing that says natural antifungals. Cool. Okay, so Jan, here's what we're going to look at. This is antifungals. I'll tell you which of these I know to be good antibacterials as well. I couldn't find someone without like spending a whole lot of time going through them. Somebody that had one that had like a Klebsiella or an E. coli. I could do that after we go through maybe Steph's case and we'll find something. But berberine is definitely a good antibacterial. So that could be one of your things that you do. Grapefruit seed extract, I don't like using a whole lot. Oregano tends to be a better antibacterial than antifungal, or in this case, this person had been taking a lot of oregano in a different protocol. So I think in the end, he'd gotten rid of some of his other bugs, but this was resistant. So this particular bug was resistant, probably because he'd taken so much of it. Plant tannins, there's something Integrative Therapeutics, I think it is, has something called viral there's something called Tamil bit, but that has dairy in it. I don't use that one, but it's viral bit or something like that. And I'll find it on Amazon in a moment. So you can alternate, like, say, the berberine, caprylic acid, uva, ursine, and plant tannins. But we didn't do a sensitivity here on you, so we don't know for sure. And then Steph might have some other antimicrobials in her protocol. And then I would just pick four of them and go through. Okay? And that's basically that. Jan, just type in and say that you saw that and understood, and if there's any other questions. And I'll get out of that. Let's see. Probably can still see it when I hit escape. There we go. Yeah, understood, so helpful. Great. Yeah, and if I can find the one that I know somebody recently, I have one, but I just don't remember who it was that had the Klebsiella and some of the other bacterial stuff. But we'll move on to Steph's case because maybe Steph has one that shows it. But this is the kind of test I like when I do it. I like to start with the BioHealth because so many of the other labs miss the H. pylori. So you get a general broad brush overview. Are there some parasites? Are there some gut stuff? Is there an H. pylori? You can start a general protocol at that point. Then you can go back in 2 to 3 months, and then you can go back and see if you need to do more detailed work and what's there. The other reason I like these doctors' data tests is they also show like small short-chain fatty acids and all the other things that are super important for gut health. Okay, so let me undo that. And Lynn said that there was another one that Steph did. Is it in the cases or is it in the uploader, Lynn? Where did she put it? This is Steph's? Okay, let's see. Okay, good. Hopefully I'll be able to look at this one. All right, so hopefully it'll open it without me having to download it. Okay, good. So let me make this one bigger, and then I'll share this screen. And this is Steph's case. And then, Steph, if you're on the line, let me open you up. Steph. I see cell phone Vancouver. That's Steph. Okay. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
So
I'm going to just switch you to the web thing so that I can have the people who are listening in perhaps on the web only that they could hear. Well, they could, should be able to hear because this is Instant Teleseminar. Yeah. Okay. We don't have to deal with that. Yes.
Phew.
I don't have to do anything different. So make sure everybody, can you hear Steph? Just raise your hand with a star two if you can hear Steph. Say hi, Steph.
Hi.
I forgot, you know, I was on that Maestro call this afternoon, which doesn't have the thing. Okay. So let me go back to. And there's so many windows open, I can't stand it. I mean, I really. All right, so here we go. There we go. Let me share that. Share window. And I'll. Okay, so tell me, guys, on the chat whether you can see Steph's case. Okay, let me open it a little wider. Yes, you can. Yay. Okay, so. You want to tell me a little bit about this person?
Right. So I think this is the one that I uploaded, a week and a half ago or so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this person has, pretty high secretory IgA and a lot of allergies.
Well, tell us a little bit about it. We'll look at this. We'll look at the lab stuff.
Okay.
Tell us about her, what her complaints are. Yeah.
Yeah, so her complaints are constipation. Exhaustion, food allergies, goodness gracious, autoimmune stuff, and the sort of thyroid stuff like hair loss and.
Okay. And how old is she?
Yeah, she is 50.
Okay. And menopausal, perimenopausal? Has she gone through menopause?
Not yet. Yeah. So Perry,
okay.
I guess.
So Perry, I guess. Okay.
Yeah.
So the comments were there's some files. Okay. Regarding a client, she has rectus diastasis, which is like a separation of the rectus abdominal muscle. So often happens from childbirth, but there's other things that can cause it. Citrobacter overgrowth, which she discovered is causing colitis. And that's what you see on these labs we're going to look at.
Right. So, yeah, they found a lot of redness and irritation in her stomach, which we can talk about, I guess, later. But she was having some severe abdominal pain, and I was thinking, you know, this isn't right, and I know about the connection with Citrobacter. And so I sent her to go get an endoscopy, and, yeah, they decided that it was colitis, and so it's like an extra, like, label for her, and I almost feel bad that it's now another... Mm-hmm. Another label of something that she is carrying around. And I'm just wondering really what this muscle connection, if there's any sort of, I mean, I know it has an effect on her small intestine movement. It must.
Right, right.
Because you don't have the support of the abdominal musculature to hold things in, and it's just everything can be really floppy.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm seeking solutions for the constipation, because I know that we really need to get that migrating motor complex going in order to really clear the Citrobacter infection. And I know she
what has
to
she done so
better.
Far? What has she done so far to help?
Magnesium, 5-HTP, saltwater flush. Vitamin C, which does not work for her because of her irritation.
Right.
Which was the tip
off
for me.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
She's tried a lot of things. Right now, we're doing St. John's wort and hops and turkey rhubarb and 5-HTP. And I think we have a somewhat functional, like she is able to go in the morning.
Yeah.
She's also added ginger and magnesium. So she's got this whole cocktail of stuff.
Wow.
Have you tried, what's the Ayurvedic one? Trifala? That's supposed to have really good effects on the migrating motor complex.
Yeah. So we've tried that because it's like a combination of herbs. Yeah. She reacted a little badly to that, and I just can't figure out which herb it was.
It's three herbs, right? It's because it's Trifala, It's amla and two others that I can never pronounce. So
right. Yeah, and I don't know if the amla was just causing her pain or because it works for other people sometimes. So not for her.
Okay. All right. And did you work on some of the vagus nerve things? Because those things often affect the migrating motor, like getting her to sing and gargle and all that kind of stuff. Okay.
Is there some kind of manual thing that she can do?
How separated is it? How bad is it?
This is just purely subjective, but I mean, I've seen her abdomen, it looks normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's had this for a long time, the rectus diastasis, and so I mean, I'm assuming that it's pretty pronounced. Like, it's something that she talks about a lot. She goes to see a chiropractor and a doctor that she sees about it quite regularly.
Mm-hmm. And do they do any manipulations for it? I mean, I don't know of manipulations, but there's always
It doesn't sound like they're actually doing anything specifically for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know what there is to do, so I'm just rectus.
Thank you.
Let me just look some things up. Here we go. Wondering if there are any particular...
Right.
Well, anything related to connective tissue support would be helpful for that, right? So you want to make sure, I mean, vitamin C, manganese is super important for collagen support. Amino acids, any of the amino acids that are important for collagen building, like proline.
Proline,
hydroxyproline, and lysine. Three that are most important for collagen support. If she's not vegan or vegetarian, there's certainly collagen supplements that she could do.
Right.
you know, which would have the all of those amino acids in there. I personally don't see the difference. People say, oh yeah, you can't do it with just amino acids. You got to have the collagen. Well, the body's going to break the collagen down into amino acids and then put it back together.
And
it's not
put
like
it back together.
You can't eat animal collagen and have it like suddenly make its way into your body and go into your
right
tissue. It doesn't work that way. But it's providing the raw materials. So you can provide the raw materials with single
right
amino acids and some other things like that. So,
thinking about that, and I gave her some nori, some mm-hmm just nori from Ryan Drum's website or whatever,
mm-hmm,
for some of those amino acids. But I don't know. You know how Mike Mutzel recommended that, hyaluronic acid
right
to make the body make more collagen? Would that mm-hmm be something?
That could be something that could be helpful as well. Yep. Yep. And certainly the that amino acid thing, the master amino and MAP could be
yeah
very helpful.
Okay.
That could be, you know, any of the powdered amino acids most people won't take because they taste so awful. But,
yeah,
you know, an individual, like a well thought out collagen support, I think that Metagenics used to have something they called Collagenics that had a bunch of different things, and I used to use it after people had injuries. So that might be
okay
useful. But I would be
yeah
looking at collagen support.
Okay.
I don't know if there are particular exercises for it. Okay, here we go.
Right.
Exercises. Here we go. There's actually, if you go into Google and you do that if you go into Google and there's some exercise, I don't know the source of these, so but there's some, it looks like core exercises, but these are some of the ones, there are some showing, I think, for
okay
diastasis rectus, you know, so just look up exercises,
okay,
maybe consult with somebody who is a, you know, like a physical therapist or occupational therapist who might have some ideas, or an exercise physiologist.
Right. Okay.
You know, so see about, because it's all going to be core strengthening. So, you know, where
right
that the rectus is damaged, right, and it's separated, but there's a lot of other muscles in that area
right
that you can do to support. It's like when you have somebody has a shoulder problem, you know, like a rotator cuff problem, we always have them do the little muscles to build it up so that they don't, you know, that they have some support, because you can't get back some of that, the damaged
right
ligaments. So those are some
right
things I would look at. I'd love to open up the, let me put this down again. I'd love to open up these cases. This is the scan. So the secret stopper or something scan is a,
yeah, that's the endoscopy that they did of her stomach.
Is it actually the pictures here that we're going to see?
Yeah.
Or is it, oh, cool. Okay. Okay. I'm going to save this into the folder. I think it might already be there, but I don't know. I'll see. Sometimes Dropbox immediately. Yes, Jeff Jackson, here we go. Let me see, it
cool
might already be there. There we go, okay. Open with Adobe Acrobat. And we'll see it. All right. Here, I'll change the share so that it looks at the scan. Share window. So she's in Chicago, eh?
Yeah.
So prior to the procedure, physical exam was performed, patient medication, blah, blah, blah. The review, all questions answered, blah, 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 blah. High definition guess. Okay, so it's just telling us what they did.
Yeah.
Findings, mucosal changes. Oh, did I change something? I think I might have. Okay, there we go. Still seeing it. Mucosal changes, including punctate white spots, were found in the middle third of the esophagus and in the lower
sure
third of the esophagus. Biopsies taken by LA, gastric body. So biopsies. So they found some bile, basically, or, you know, bile, diluted bile in the stomach. So she the
right
one you were talking about with the sphincter,
yeah,
suspecting sphincter stuff.
Yeah. I'm still on about this case.
Yeah. Okay, so let's see. H. pylori testing was done, and that's a good way to do it. Hopefully most people don't have to have an endoscopy to have their H. pylori tested. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
A few non-bleeding erosions were found in the stomach. So between H. pylori and bile going back up into the stomach lining is not doing so well.
Totally, and that, being eaten alive.
Yeah, yes. Can be causing doubled over pain. So here
definitely
is the inside. Oh, look at this. So this is the second portion of the duodenum. Look at those folds. You know, it's one thing to like look at pictures of them, but look at those folds, right?
Yeah.
This is the stomach, gastric body. This is the pyloric sphincter. The pyloric sphincter, remember, is that sphincter at the bottom of the stomach. So it's hard to tell by looking at it whether it's loose or not, but it does. There is some patency. It is open. I'm not sure how tight it gets down, but clearly that sphincter is opening up to allow bile to escape into the stomach.
Exactly.
And this is the fluid. This is the bilious fluid that they're saying. See that kind of liquidy? It almost has a green tinge to it, right? And it just doesn't look right. It doesn't look real healthy in there.
No.
Yeah.
And it probably feels like pouring soap in your eye or whatever.
Yeah, it's just like really steamy and yucky. Okay, and what else?
Yeah,
so there's some erosions that they're pointing out with the arrows. You see that? You see the kind of areas of redness. And then there's some redness there. So this is what it looks like on the inside of a stomach where it's not feeling so good. Now, we know, you know, things like slippery elm and stuff, if she tolerates that, slippery elm marshmallow provides some mucosa, that mucin is that there's a particular supplement. I'm drawing a blank on the name of it, but it's I recommended it to people in Grand, but it's basically mucin to try to repair that. But also DGL has the ability to repair that. When somebody has something like that and they give them antacids, thinking that they're solving their problem, they're actually making their problem worse because now they're not digesting their protein or their minerals. But what happens when you do DGL or you give them slippery elm or other kinds of, you know, mucosal building, they're actually going to repair that. Because think about it. I mean, if you have a cut on your hand, it's going to repair, right?
Right.
But it's not going to repair if you keep sticking it in soapy dishwater and, you know, on the open wound. And what happens with folks? That's why fasting is such an amazing healing thing for the gut in particular, because there's a turnover of 5 to 7 days on this stuff. And, you know, but it's not going to turn over that quickly and heal in the 5 to 7 days when there's gunk going in, like food, for example.
Right.
So it's why fasting works really well, or fasting, you know, along with maybe just taking some of these healing herbs. Not everybody's willing to do fasting, however.
Right. So she was able to do a couple days of fasting, and I think it helped her to feel a lot better.
She felt
gave her some confidence to hopefully do it again.
Yeah, I think even intermittent fasting, somebody like with something like this, I would minimally do the 2 days a week of intermittent fasting of the 24 hours, because every bit you do is going to help, but 2 to 3 days at a time can be even more helpful because it's just going to give it a chance. And then just doing the blended foods, like she should, I would take her off all solid foods and just have her blend everything.
Right.
And is she thin, heavy?
She's thin. We were doing blended foods for a while, and we kind of switch between doing blended foods for a couple of weeks, and then we do like a couple of days of fasting, and then we go back to eating simple meals, and we kind of end up rotating these things around because, she gets bored, after a
couple
of weeks.
Well, that old bored thing again, screw bored, you know what I mean?
Here we are talking about being bored with food again. I know.
If my stomach looks like that, it's like, I don't care. I'm not going to eat anything. I'm just going to put blended stuff in and mucilaginous stuff and slippery elm and whatever it takes. I don't care if I'm bored. Screw bored.
Right.
I mean, really, you know, pain, bored,
okay.
Pain, bored. Which do you prefer, pain or bored?
Okay.
And I know I'm being harsh
again.
And we have to be sweet with people. You know, you have to do tough love. But it's really a matter of really bored. You know, okay, so choose not being bored over, you know, bored and in pain, or not bored but in pain, or bored with no pain. I personally choose with bored and no pain, you know?
Exactly.
Right?
Me too.
Right. So that's where we have to come with people, because they're so, you know, everybody's so attached and in love with their taste buds that they feel like their taste buds rule them. So, and I'm not saying that this, I'm not being harsh. I'm just kind of trying to make light of it. Right,
yeah.
She may be really ready, but sometimes we have to say, look, let's just do this. And if she is thin, then alternating the days of fasting with days of, it could be high fat food, you know, stick in the MCT oil and stick in the coconut oil and, you know, give her the blended, like nut milks, but as make sure, you know, even fermented ones, if she tolerates whatever probiotics she tolerates, which you know how to do. But I would say make sure she gets the caloric density. And then she can do fasting, but it's caloric density in a very, very easy to digest way. You can make nut milks where you can put in some enzymes and probiotics to make them much more digestible so the body doesn't have to work too hard to try to heal this, right?
To make it even more,
A heavier person, easy. Heavy person, easy, right? Yeah, just take away the calories, blend up some stuff. And if it's vegetables, I wouldn't be doing raw vegetables here. I wouldn't be having her eat a salad, right? Because it's like sandpaper on that. So steam them and blend them. I would eat steamed and blended vegetables every day of the week if, you know, it tastes good and it's easy. And broths, you know, so nutrient dense. But very easy on this because you want it to heal. You know, when you see this, you could go, oh, yeah. Like if that was my hand and I kept sticking it into the dirt and I kept sticking it into, you know, this harsh stuff, then it wouldn't heal, right? Same thing in there, right? And we want those things to heal. And they can heal very quickly. They won't heal on the medical approach, but they will heal very quickly if they're allowed to.
So
combination of the DGL and the, you know, all the mucilaginous stuff, slippery elm and other things like that. But there is one, go to the Grand, I can't remember the name of the particular product, but it's a mucin product and it's in the Grand and it says if you have inflammatory bowel disease, but it could also be helpful for something like this. Is she on DGL?
She doesn't tolerate that super well. She seems okay with slippery elm.
Okay. And you can alternate slippery elm, marshmallow, plantain.
Right.
And then see, you know, so if she gets, you know, if she has a lot of food sensitivities, she might develop other symptoms that are away from the gut, away from the stomach itself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's definitely a factor.
So there's part of her esophagus, like, you know, when people have, this is what it would look like if somebody says they have reflux and the doctor says, oh, yeah, just take antacids. Well, you got to heal the mucosa there, right? And then you have to heal the valve. So I think collagen is probably a really good thing between the diastasis recti, right? So she's got a collagen problem there. Her sphincters are loose, collagen support there, right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't be putting this person on HCL. Ouch.
No.
Right? Which is why you really want to be careful before doing HCL challenges on people to really make sure that based on symptoms that there's not a chance that they have gastritis or, you know, some kind of ulceration in their stomach.
Right. This, looking at this test made me wonder something. And, you know, everybody assumes that when they have gastric reflux, it's, you know, their stomach acid. Hers, it's the bile, which is really alkaline, which is in there eating away the mucosal lining in her stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's actually super alkaline.
Right. It's the opposite of what the stomach
is. If you were just feeling this, we would be feeling like, ooh, I have too much stomach acid, but it's actually alkaline. So then if we're taking like antacids on top of that.
Right. Makes it worse.
And I'm just wondering how often this happens. I don't know. How many people go and get an endoscopy?
Not very many.
They just go get Tums. Yeah.
Yeah. And I had one of these done ages ago, but I didn't know enough that and I'm sure the doctors are long gone that did it, that I didn't go back and see it because I didn't know anything back then. I would have loved to go back and see what was really going on there. I mean, they said it wasn't an ulcer, but what was it, right? They didn't say you have like, you know, some a little areas of gastritis or little areas, you know, but they said, oh, you don't have an ulcer. Drink milk. But you're right. It is because she's got so much bile in there. So that's neutralizing her stomach. So she's not going to be digesting because all this bile that's alkaline gets into her stomach.
Right.
So no amount of bitters and HCL really do the trick there. And it's just going to make it worse. So that's why no matter what she eats, she probably hurts.
Yeah. it seems like that to her, and she's quite discouraged. But
yeah, yeah. But I would make, you know, in the grand thing, I have a recipe for, I think it's a gut repair gruel, and it has marshmallow and, you know, looking at some of those things. You could flavor it if she's bored. One day she can put a little bit of, I don't know, cinnamon, and another day she can put a little cardamom. I don't know. Keep herself from getting too bored. So here's what they said. Let's see. Oh, they did a sigmoidoscopy too, right? So, I mean, think about how invasive this is, right, guys? We're sticking scopes up to look at the inside. And it's fascinating, but, boy, I don't want to be on the receiving end. So here's a rectum, right? And then sigmoid colon, so it's all, you know, kind of looping around. I mean, it looks kind of pink here. You know, and you have to look at these a lot, like to the naked eye, you go, oh, I don't know, what's that got? But they found some internal hemorrhoids. And there's the rectum. Yeah, that looks really rough and raw, doesn't it? You see how that looks?
Yeah.
You know, from the other angle, raw. You don't see it, but that looks very raw. That's not going to feel good. That's not going to feel good. So she probably hurts when things are going in. It hurts when things are coming out.
Yeah, definitely.
And she's had these problems her whole life?
She's had them for quite some time, like a good decade or more.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know the Citrobacter is really associated with this kind of thing. Like, I've seen it in other studies, but at this point, like, we're not in the state to go into warfare against Citrobacter. We're just like in pain here.
Right. We've got to heal it.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the things that would kill it might be alkaloids and things that might be hurting her gut.
Exactly.
You do have to be careful, and you have to go with priority. So what this really says is when we, you know, go by labs or we go by our clinical judgment, most of the time it's great, we can figure it out. But when it's not, don't just assume, you know, it's not patient compliance or whatever. Think that there's some eating away, some areas like that are being torn up, and you want to go really careful. And then, because, you know, when I go through, when I teach people in Grand and when I work with people, it's always about, let's just start by calming things down. Let's start by doing the mucosal soothing type of things, because regardless of what the problem is, you want to make sure that you're taking away from the foods that are tearing it apart, and that you're putting in some things that are mucosal healers and finding those. And if one doesn't work, then another might. So, okay, this is a 7-page report. So this is the GI effects from Metametrics Genova, right? So this gives us a little bit more information than the test we looked at with Jan a little while ago. So pancreatic elastase, well, how's her pancreatic function? Well, you know, she's at 219. We like it to be greater than 200. So she's barely on the edge of having good pancreatic function.
I'd like to take that as a celebration, though. But
it's a celebration, but, you know, she could be better.
Could be better.
Products of protein breakdown. So looking at that being 1.89, she's on the low end there. Fecal fat, you know, she's on the low end, which is fine. Triglycerides, she's a little bit higher on the triglycerides. Her long chain fats, her cholesterol, and her phospholipids. So, you know, they're not alarm things, but there's just some, you know, they're not perfect in it by any stretch. These are inflammatory markers. And so we want these numbers to be low, and hers is very low. So there's not like inflammatory bowel disease. If we had inflammatory bowel disease like Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, we're going to see numbers really high there, you know, really high. And they don't show the iron one. Anyway, they don't show that one.
Right.
her secretory IgA is very low, and that's not very good. Why is that showing fecal secretory IgA? I don't like to see it below detectable limit. And why do they have that as green? I mean, high is inflammatory mark, but low says
right.
that she doesn't have the ability to fight infection real well, right? So even if there's
right.
an infection there, she's not in the throes of it. I just looked at somebody the other day. I can pull his back up again. But his,
right.
He had very high secretory IgA, and
right.
but very low. All the other inflammatory markers were mostly low. One was a little bit high. So he was
right.
somebody who had been diagnosed with ulcerative colitis. And
right.
I was like, wow, this thing is really healing well. But all
right.
the bugs that are there were actually, you're fighting them. That's good. So what we need
right.
to do is get rid of them. He was at a point where, yeah, let's get rid of it. You know, the inflammation was down. But this isn't showing as inflammation in the colon. Those
right.
That was not so bad. It's mostly in, it looks like it's mostly in her esophagus and stomach.
Right. Yeah, I think her IgA was higher on her last test, or I know it was higher on her last test,
mm-hmm.
and it's come down quite a bit. So,
you know, amla is actually, I don't know if you can try some amla on its own and see if that wasn't the part of the Trafala, because amla
right.
is really good at rebuilding secretory IgA, as is vitamin A. So you want to look
cool.
at her vitamin A, and she may have some issues.
Wonderful.
You know, a genetic, like she can't convert beta carotene to vitamin A, but you can
right.
you can just try her on, you know, 5 to 10,000 IUs of vitamin A a day and see.
Right. I have her
them.
Genetic stuff too. I just have to remember what SNP that is. Go back.
It's the BCM01, and there's three
BCM01.
Different variants. BCM01. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's
sure.
great information. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the short chain fatty acids are real low. So you can explain to people what the problem is with that better than I can. So go ahead for it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So the bifidum bacteria in the large intestine feed a colony of bacteria that create short chain fatty acids, which can help to heal the gut and also can be used for the body directly as energy. And so the only way to improve the status of those bacteria at this time is to improve the bifidum status.
Mm-hmm.
So
have you got her on good doses of bifidus?
I think
right
she's on the D-lactic free right now, but we can switch back to the
bifidus. You might want to get, because remember, you're the one that taught me this 9-to-1, right? Or 10-to-1. You want
yeah.
the bifidus to be 9 or 10 to 1, the lacto, and you're not going to get that in that formula. So you can keep her
right.
on that formula if you want, but I would also up the bifidus. Because
so
given this being so low, and the butyrate is really
yeah.
low, and the bifidus
totally.
Helps to create butyrate. Now you can
yeah.
give a supplement of butyrate if you want to, and that can be helpful. And I've seen
yeah.
people do butyrate suppositories as well.
Right. I just want to also work with her body to build up what it needs to make that
mm-hmm.
itself. So she's
right.
just
right. Now, here's the deal. We always want that, right? We want them to make it themselves. But sometimes when they're in really excruciating pain, we
right.
give them what they can't make for a while we're teaching the body to make it. So sometimes, you know, it's a tough line to kind of cross. Or not cross, right, is that decision between the body really needs this right now. I want to teach her to make it. But, you know, do we want to wait 3 months before her body catches on and let her suffer? Or do we want to give it to her now while we're teaching it? So it's a different
right.
approach. Like in medicine, they'll just give, okay, you're not making hormones, here they are. Oh, you're not making this, here it is. But they're not doing
right.
anything to teach you how to make it, right? So
right.
I think that there's a line to cross here, and she's rock bottom on it.
Yeah.
You know, and you can do
yeah,
butyrate suppository, so it doesn't have to go through the whole tract. Just
that sounds good.
Suppositories, or you can make butyrate suppositories, right? You can
right.
just get some coconut oil and, you know,
yeah.
open up some butyrate capsules in there and have her do it that way so you get it directly in there. You can do the same thing with your bifidus as well if you want to, you know,
right.
make sure. Because a lot of it does die as it goes through the intestinal tract. It's not going to, in her
sure.
case, because she doesn't have any stomach acid to kill it.
She got nothing to kill it.
So, you know, she probably survived just fine. But, you know, so look, very, very low. on the percent butyrate versus acetate and propionate, but she doesn't have much of any of them because if you look at her total of all three, it's super low, but the proportionally speaking, she's extremely low in butyrate.
On the butyrate, yeah.
And butyrate is really important. And yeah, the bifidus can do it, but get her on a lot of bifidus.
Yeah, you know, okay. Yeah, I'll go back to that.
Implants or whatever. And you can do enemas with probiotics too. So you can do retention enemas. You can dissolve the probiotics in a little water, and nice warm water. Not too warm. You don't want to kill them. And then you, insert about a cup of that or a half a cup, whatever you think they can hold. And you do a regular enema first to really like clean it out so that there's some spot for it to be absorbed and move up. And then you just insert the tube as high as they can tolerate you inserting it. You don't want to try to get it out their mouth, but, you do want to insert it a little higher than maybe you would for a typical retention enema, like a wheatgrass juice, where you're trying to get it. You don't care about it being in the intestine. You want it to be absorbed through the enterohepatic circulation. But in this case, I would say, absorb it up there and then let her lay back and with the hips, lift the hips up. So lay on the back with the hips up to try to get it out forward. And then once you lay there for a while, then have her turn onto her right side so that it can get around. And that'll, you should be able to get some of that around. And you play with the amount.
Okay.
And it's not something you just do once. It's something that she could do on a more regular basis. And that'll help to replenish the bifidus there. And you might want to throw some butyrate. I don't know how butyrate is, if it would dissolve in. I think it should.
Right.
So I think you can do rectal infusion of both. Yeah.
Right. That's cool. We were doing the coconut oil suppository, like you're mixing it in there and putting it, but this might be a different activity that we can do. And if we can put the butyrate in there, that would be really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You might as well get the stuff right where they need it rather than having to have to go through the entire digestive tract, all 22 feet or whatever of it to get there.
Yeah.
Does that help?
Makes sense. Yeah, it does help very much.
What else she's got here? So then this is her gut stuff, right? So her commensal, which are her, they're okay as long as you don't get everything out of balance. They're the ones that they can go either way, right? They can be protective or they can be bad if they're out of balance. And so she's got decent amounts here. She's got really high levels of this Oderobacter. I don't know that one, but it doesn't seem so good. I would do some research and see what you can do. And the Prevotella, I've seen the Prevotella high in people before.
Yeah.
But did they do a sensitivity on these?
They
don't always do it.
Oh, I feel like there was a sensitivity on the last page.
Okay. So we'll look. Firmicutes, right? So they show you all the different Firmicutes, not just the total, which is cool. And the Firmicutes are the ones that are not so good on her. So here, you said she's on the, she's got a lot of lactobacillus. We don't know which ones they are, but maybe she's thrown it out of balance with that.
Right.
I don't know, because I don't know what they're testing here, right? They're just going species-wise, because they're doing the genetics here, right? They're not doing the actual bug.
And all the lactobacillus are Firmicutes.
Yeah, they are, right.
So, it could just be.
It could just
like she might have very little diversity to start with.
Yeah, because her bifidum is pretty low and her back lactobacillus is high. And the fecal, there's a lot of them that are higher.
Yeah.
But with the bifido is on the lower side and you want that to be way higher, right? You want that much higher.
Agree. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I would do. Proteobacter, eukaryotes, blah, blah, blah. So she's got some stuff out of balance that I would say, let's see what it does. So the culture and sensitivity. Oh, so this is showing you the gastrointestinal microbiome. So she does have some E. coli, 4+. Her bifidus shows up as 3+. Interesting, but the lactobacillus shows up. I'm not sure. NG there. What does NG mean?
NG.
Okay, there's additional bacteria. Let's see what they do. Parasitology, none found. It's good. Fecal blood, negative. That's good. Consistency, not given. This is a new format for their test, by the way. I haven't seen it done this way before. So she doesn't have to really bad stuff. No H. pylori, but I don't necessarily trust this one for H. pylori. But
She's had the 401H too.
Okay, and she's clear. Good.
Yeah.
But they saw it in there, though. The thing said they saw it.
Oh, really?
It said it on the scope, didn't it?
I thought it said no. I thought it said H. pylori, no.
Maybe it said no. Maybe I was.
Oh, what if I read it wrong?
Do I have it open still? Let me see. I might have closed it. I'll open up again and see. I thought I read that she did have some H. pylori, but maybe I was wrong. Yeah, so here's some natural agents that they show, and theirs is slightly different. Let me do. It's a low inhibition up to high inhibition. Berberine is decent. There are other, oregano is not so hot. Plant tannins and ursi. So these are the four that I had mentioned earlier on the test when I was looking at JANS. I said these four are actually good for bacteria. So these are the ones that they measured against hers. So, you know, Jan would be well to alternate between these guys. It's interesting. Right. We always jump right into oregano, and lately I've seen the oregano not be so hot. So
it's just so common that people take it that they just,
they get sensitive to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jan likes the idea of the butyrate suppository with coconut oil.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And Sequoia says to rebuild secretory IgA. I mentioned amla. I just say amla. I can't say that whole Ayurvedic name. The other thing was vitamin A.
Cool.
Maria, you have lots of opportunity to learn. See, you haven't been through any of the modules yet, so you will go through them and you will learn. And we're jumping ahead with a lot of this too. We'll be going through these labs. We'll be doing them ad infinitum in NEPG. Lots and lots and lots. So no issues with that. We learn every time we go through it. Let's see. I'm going to see if there's any other questions out here. And some of them they may have for you. Let's see. There's Jan. Thank you. But not Tanelbit, Lynn. That one has dairy in it. There's another by Intensive Nutrition. That's, I think it's virucidin or something like that. That has the tannins without the extra gunk. So, yeah, that one, I'd be careful about that because it has casein in it. We don't want to give somebody casein when they have a gut problem. See if you can find that. Let's see. So, TTAP, that's a good idea to look at TTAP as possible. Lynn says belly bands. There's some belly bands that help. Pilates type exercises for it. Collagenics. Hyaluronic acid, let's see. Okay, wrinkle creams, oh good. I would really like to recommend you see a physical therapist. I had said that too, but Laura, that's great because if you think that that's something that could be helped, so have her see a physical therapist. You want to chat with Laura because she's, does pelvic floor and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
All right, cool. That's good to know. And then, let's see. Avoid traditional crunches, sit-ups, and planks because they too much stress on the wall. Absolutely. Can I move the picture up? I don't know if I saw that Tupler technique. I didn't know that one. So you can look at that one. Good. Exercises. Nutrition and herbs for the stomach and digestion. So that shows some of the other stuff from Grand. That rectum looks really sore. Yeah, it looks like, looks like probably my son's looked like after he ate a whole big ghost pepper and then a scorpion pepper just to be cool. And he's running around the house like, and the next day he goes, oh my God, it hurt as much coming out as it did going in. Crazy what kids do with their attention. Rebuild secretory IgA. You mentioned AMWA and vitamin A. Intensive there, thank you. The virusin, that's the one that she might want to look at, anybody when you're looking at the alternating stuff, the plant tannins. And you have other stuff. So what other things do you use? Because you have other stuff that you teach in Corny's set.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think I would go into any of the strong killing herbs right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So maybe some mild stuff.
Yeah. Right now I was kind of thinking about any herbs that might help with her pyloric sphincter without further constipating her. And I was kind of at a loss.
So. Yeah, but that might be, it might not constipate her to tighten that sphincter up in the sphincter because things are going the wrong way when it's open, right? And that
Maybe it would help.
Could be helpful.
I'm just thinking the plant tannins might help with that, but then I'm just worried that they constipate her for it, but who knows?
Right, exactly. I see what you mean, yeah. So, I was thinking more in terms of for Jan. Then for your gal, your gal needs to really focus on, I think, getting the bifidus up, getting some short chain fatty acids. Arabinoglactans, have you used those very much? Those tend to be really good for building the short chain fatty acids.
I haven't used them.
Yeah, larch. It's usually from a plant called larch, and it's a powder you can get from Thorn, and a couple of other companies have them, but really pure. It's just arabinoglactans. I'm not sure how it works for someone on, I don't know if it's a problem with FODMAPs or specific carbohydrate, but I think I've used it with lots of good results.
Okay.
And that's it.
Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah,
thank
there's
you.
A lot of really great links that Lynn and other people have been putting in there, so you might want to go in and save the chat.
Yeah, I hope I can get a transcript of the chat. Or
are you not on the thing? So Lynn, will
you
save the chat?
Yeah, I'm just on my phone.
Chat? Yeah, Lynn, will you save the chat so we could put the chat up with this recording, please? When we're done, we'll save it. We usually try to do that.
Thank you.
Yeah, because there's always so much good stuff in there.
Okay.
So let me go to see if anybody has any questions on the phone. I'm going to look to see if this is helpful for people. You learn so much from cases, so much more than just slide presentations. I wanted to look back one more time at her scan. So give me a second because I wanted to just see, because I thought I read that they did see H. pylori, and it might have been I was scanning it quickly and I didn't. It basically was that they did not see it. Okay, let me see. Go back here. And, there are quite a number of places in the program itself that I have pictures of colonoscopies and stuff, and actually live ones. So there's a couple of presentations where they are, but there's also, are you seeing it now? Let's see. Let's go back to the beginning. I thought I saw. Let me go back to page one. I have to reboot my computer. I think it's been too long. Okay. I don't want to print. I didn't say print. Did I say print? Okay. And it just might have been that I... where did we see H. pylori listed? Or maybe.
Yeah, I could have read it wrong. So
maybe it was in your thing that I read H. pylori and you said no H. pylori. Did you remember seeing it in here where they mentioned H. pylori?
I think I read something that said H. pylori negative or. Yeah.
Okay, let's see. Ah, here. Biopsies were taken with cold forceps for Helicobacter pylori testing or losing CLO test. And then, okay, so that's where they said they took the thing, but was there something at the very end that said the results of that CLO test? It doesn't say it was negative. It just said they tested it.
I feel like I read maybe something else that I didn't upload.
Maybe there was a report or something, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, make sure. Just double check on it and make sure. So, because
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, it would be good to know whether it's yes or no.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, Jan just posted that larch arabinogalactan, a polysaccharide powder from Larix, Western larch, possesses important immune enhancing properties and is an excellent source of fiber, but being a polysaccharide could be a problem if they have hot FODMAP. So I think you just have to check.
I'll check.
To see, you know, and PR Labs has it as well. So there you go. But I've had good results with it in, you know, people that did not have FODMAP issues. Okay. Let's see if there's anybody else has questions then. Where is it? Welcome to the event. Oh, that goes down. Welcome to the event. Here we are. I'm going to close this. I'm going to go back to my event. And Lynn has her hand up. So, Lynn, did you have something to add, share, ask?
No.
I saw your hand up.
Oh, I think that was you were asking if somebody could hear or raise your hand or something like that.
Okay. Cool.
No, I want to thank Steph, though, because this was fascinating. I and her client, because I know it was not a pleasure trip, but it was certainly fascinating to see truly within the bowels of the human body. And so I appreciate that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I really think it's fascinating to be able to see inside the bod, you know, to really see it. So I can see the fascination of somebody going into surgery and that sort of thing. But I love being able to see what's going on in there. Okay. Anybody else? Questions or comments? Let's see if there's any here. Let's see, refresh. Michelle says, what about internal physical therapist work for her client? I believe they work on pelvic bowel with people who are constipated. Steph might want to ask Laura about this since she has that background. So that's something to look at too. The other thing is visceral. There are some things called visceral manipulation, and that's through the Upledger Institute. They teach visceral manipulation. I actually signed up and paid for a class in visceral manipulation about 20 years ago. I was going to go to it and I never made it, and I never got my money back either, darn. But I've had the work done on me, and it basically works on, you have to learn, you know, where all the different ligaments are, and you're working on places that you can release tension and you can move things around. So it might be something for her to look into, and certainly talk, have a conversation with Laura about some possibilities there too. Let's see what else. Michelle says, how do you know which test to recommend? Will we learn that when we do the NEP test? Yeah, we will. We will go through all that. But in general, you know, for me, it's like if I do suspect H. pylori, I usually start with the BioHealth. And then in terms of other tests, Michelle, there's tons of information. There's module after module on, you know, all the kinds of testing you can do with blood testing. And then we have a whole bunch more with all the functional tests. But in terms of just GI, as is what I'm assuming you're asking, I usually start with the BioHealth if I suspect H. pylori. If I really don't suspect H. pylori and I really suspect an intestinal overgrowth or something, then I'll start. I like the doctor's data. I just seem to like it better than the Genova. You might find that you like the Genova better, and we'll go through all of them and we'll show you the differences. You just saw the Genova, which is brand new, their whole format that way. I really, really, really like the sensitivity test. That's just my preference. I like to see what their particular gut bugs are responding to or not, because, you know, you see if there's some resistance and you think you're going to give them oregano and they're resistant to oregano, or you think you're going to give them, you know, berberine and they don't respond to that, it's nice to know. So it's nice when they can do those sensitivity tests. So for me, my ideal would be if a person had an unlimited pocketbook, I would start with both the BioHealth H. pylori and, say, the doctor's data, and do both. And then I would work from there. And then if I felt like more was needed, if I felt like they're, you know, the leaky gut thing, I might do the Cyrex leaky gut. But a lot of times if you can do some of this stuff, you can get things healed, then see if they still have symptoms and then do the leaky gut. Because chances are good if they've got all this bacterial overgrowth or candida, parasite, et cetera, overgrowth, that they're going to have leaky gut just because of all the endotoxins and the lipopolysaccharides that those bugs are producing. And certainly, you know, if they're eating gluten and eating a lot of those gut-destroying foods, then no matter what you do, they're not going to get better, right? So that's why I always start with the foundations of getting them to change their diet, getting them to breathe and relax before the meal, you know, just doing basic meal hygiene and basic foundational foods, allow some of that healing to happen, and then only test when it's necessary, when they're not getting better. That's just my approach. Some people like to just blast them with tests right up front. I don't know what your feeling about that is, Steph, about the testing.
Yeah, I like to conserve the testing for when it's really necessary.
Yeah. It's invasive and it's expensive.
And sometimes it takes a while to really listen to the person enough to figure out what testing would really be best.
Exactly.
And if I blow their $500 on a really fancy test with all these diagrams on it and they really need something else, I've kind of lost my person.
Yeah. And you know, you can get so much, you can make so much traction with the simple changes a lot of times. So as we go through this module and this program, you know, you look at the basics, because so many people would come up on the, like when they're in the grand thing and they get up on there, they go, well, what herbs should I take for healing leaky gut? Well, we're in module two and we haven't gotten up there. Are you, you know, are you breathing and are you doing heart math before you eat? And are you off of gluten and are you doing that stuff yet? I'm not going to give you herbs to heal your leaky gut until you're not pounding your gut and, you know, poking holes in it, right? So I want to stop poking holes. Stop poking holes. I like the way you do the stop feeding them. I'm going to start it now, my process for healing leaky gut. Stop poking the holes. How about that for step one? You know, stop poking the holes. Heal the holes. Soothe the holes. Soothe the inflamed mucosa. You know, it's the four R's again, right? You remove, you replace, you repair, and you re-inoculate. So you have to go through the steps. You don't just jump in and say, what herbs should I take for that?
Right. So, the other thing about the basics, like if they do the basics, and if something goes wrong with the basics, like that's not normal. So it gives clues about what's really going on. So like going through those steps is so important. And skipping them...
Right. You miss out on a lot of, like I drink water and I have burning in my stomach. That's not exactly normal, right? That indicates that there's something going on there.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. So basics. So everything you've gotten so far in this program is giving you, you know, basics and beyond. The next chap stuff is going to go into the pathologies. So I really wanted you to have a good foundation in the anatomy, physiology, biochemistry of digestion. And I can't remember what the last module was, but the next one that I'm working on is the dysbiosis, you know, candida, parasites, et cetera. And then we're going to go into SIBO. We're going to go into inflammatory bowel disease, irritable bowel disease. We're going to go into the liver stuff. So we're going to go into all the other pieces on a much deeper level. And, you know, I could just put out one, you know, 1 hour presentation and cover all the rest of it. But what I don't want to do that, because I want to give you individual sections and really dig deep in there. So you really, really understand it. I don't believe in memorizing protocols. I really don't. You want to protocols, have a booklet that you print out all your protocols and you look them up. I want you to understand which protocol process you're going to go to based on understanding the chemistry and the physiology. And this is not something they teach at all. And they don't teach that kind of approach in medical school per se, or even sometimes in naturopathic school. I mean, it's just like there's a lot of protocol, this for that, and I don't like this for that. I like to have you really be digging and understanding. I had a interesting conversation last week with an MD who's working with, who actually I sent this person because she's in another country, said go and get a test done. And I, you know, had her get a thyroid test done because I thought she might be over-medicated based on some symptoms because we've been doing a lot of work and we hadn't touched her thyroid. And I thought, oh, by now she must be over-medicated because her blood sugar is normalizing and all this stuff. And now she's having anxiety. Maybe it's hyperthyroidism. So I sent her off to this this doctor, and she goes into his office, and she's got her cell phone with me on it. This guy must have thought, what is going on here? And we're having a three-way conversation, me with this guy and her, and in his office. And it was shocking, like the kind of questions he was asking me. Well, what do you think about that? And how do you? Oh, I've never thought about it that way. Well, I'm just an internist, or no, I'm just a general practitioner. I don't know all that stuff. You know, tell me what to do. What test should I order? I was like, okay. but they don't learn that approach. It's more that, okay, let's just give her this medication, right? And that's not the way it works. So a lot of that stuff is happening with the gut stuff where people are just put on antibiotics or antifungals or antiprotozoals without really looking at the underlying hygiene. And that's what we want to do. So thank you for sharing your case. Anybody else have any questions before we call tonight? Okay, we have, okay, Lynn's hand is up. I'm going to put it down. And who else? Anybody? Sequoia? Jan? Anybody? Oh, Jan, you're write your questions in. Laura has some stuff that she stopped poking holes. I love it. Yeah, it just occurred to me. I'm going to start using that. Nobody's allowed to use that. That's going to be mine. Stop poking holes. Okay, let's see. Jan says, thank you, Steph, for sharing the case and to me for helping interpret it. So Laura says, have her look for a pelvic floor physical therapist. They have training in visceral manipulation. Great. And she put up a directory. So we'll make sure we get this put up because she has a practitioner directory of pelvic floor PTs that you can find in your area. That's awesome. And here's another one for the whole U.S. and awesome, great links. So I have a question. Can I speak? Yeah, if you're here, I will open up your line. Let's see. Hi, Sequoia.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, totally. Perfectly clear.
Great. So it was kind of answered before, but I just wanted to check. I have a client and she's finally ready to spend a bunch of money on testing. And so I want to know basically what she's absorbing and what bacteria is holding her back. You know, what problems are holding her back. So, I'm looking at the BioHealth 401H and either the doctor's data or the Genova Metametrics. She also wants to know if she's got SIBO. So, and she's highly constipated all the time. So, what do you suggest? Anything else or?
Yeah, so I would be looking at maybe the doctor's data plus the BioHealth H. pylori. So I would do the doctor's data comprehensive one that has the multiple stool samples and also has the sensitivity. I would do that with the H. pylori to start. That's where I would start. Other things, if she's wanting to look at SIBO, SIBO is a tough one because the breath test is not especially accurate. A lot of times you can kind of guess if they have SIBO based on the stool test. You can't know for sure, but based on the kind of bacterial overgrowth that they might have, you know, if they have Klebsiella, for example, it, you know, it's a good possibility. If they have a big E. coli overproduction or if their lactobacillus is real high and their bifidus is real low. That's not the thing. I generally don't go SIBO straight away. I look at dealing with the other stuff and really looking at the whole digestive hygiene thing before going straight to SIBO, because SIBO is a tough one and it takes a lot of work and a lot of times you don't have to go there. So, I mean, so that's what I would do. The breath test is what you typically would do for SIBO. It's a challenging test to do because they make you eat crap for 3 days to do it. It's like really bad. I had one patient wanted to do it. And she read the thing. She goes, there's no way I'm doing this test. I'm not eating like that. They wanted her to eat white rice. And all she goes, I have tendencies towards diabetes. There's no way I'm going to eat this way for 3 days. We'll just assume I have SIBO and what should I do? You know? So that's another way to go with it. So that's where I would start with the testing.
Okay, so you mentioned that the doctor's data give you, you know, what works and what doesn't work, you know, when they come up with something.
Right.
But I was also noticing the one that Steph put up, the Metametric, it seems it does that too.
It does. And again, you'll pick your favorite as you start to do them. I've done a ton of those Metametric Genova ones. And a lot of times they come back and they come back and say, oh, you have some kind of parasite, but we don't know what it is. Taxonomy unknown. And then they don't run the sensitivity, right? Oh. And they generally don't run the sensitivity on the bacteria. And that's what doctor's data doesn't. Correct me if I'm wrong, Steph, if you know any better, but I've never seen Genova Metametric run the sensitivity on the bacteria. They just generally run it on the yeast and the parasites. So I really like that doctor's data runs it on. You'll get a separate page for Klebsiella, E. coli, Clostridia, whatever bacteria they find.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that's what I really like because, you know, it's one thing to get rid of yeast and et cetera and just go, oh, yeah, let's just do whatever for the bacteria. But it's nice to know which ones are sensitive to which ones so that you can create a protocol. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I just, you know, with seeing so many different tests, I'm like, okay, which one? And of course, it's also which is the easiest to get in Canada.
Right. That's another issue.
Yeah. So we'd have to go through, for one of them anyway, we'd have the doctor's data to have to go through you. So.
Yeah. Well, you can do that. You just order it through my website and they'll ship it.
Right. Okay. That's great. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah. You're welcome. Okay. That was Sequoia. And let me make sure I shut Sequoia, not myself. There we go. And anybody else, questions, comments? I'll look at the chat one more time. Lynn, can we see the chat? You're on the chat, Lynn. I'm not sure why you're asking about that. What was the deal with that? Let me go ask again. The question you put up, Sequoia, you said, Lynn, can we see the chat? What does that mean? Because you were chatting with her. No? You still there?
Yes, it's okay. It's sorted.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I didn't see that. Okay, good. And we'll just copy this into a Word doc and we'll put it up with the recording. Great. All right. Let me see if there's anything else over here. And I think we're good. Okay, guys. Thank you guys all for being here. This is a great conversation. I hope it was helpful for those of you who are not, you know, quite jumped all the way in. I'd love to hear that. I'll open up your lines and you can tell me what you think. Let's see if I open up, I'll put it on interactive. Somebody just sent me a message. Let me see if that's Lynn. Okay. All right, let me open it up. Interactive. And all right, bye-bye, everybody. Take care.
Bye.
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 Bye soon.